Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great podcast. The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny brings you the latest news and trends in and around the NFL. Join Mina and her guests such as Dominique Foxworth of The Right Time, insider and fantasy-focused football host Field Yates, and ESPN Radio's Mike Golic Jr. If you like X's and O's, analytics, probably too much dog talk, because Lenny's a dog, then give the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny a listen wherever you get your podcast. Also, the Peabody and Emmy Award-winning 30 for 30 documentary film series presents The Tuck Rule, a documentary that examines one of the most controversial plays in sports history. See the legendary Charles Woodson and Tom Brady discuss, for the first time, the call that changed it all. Watch live February 6th at 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Also available next day on ESPN+. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, gonna eat me a heaping helping of that crow. Also, your story is about the game, cheat. But first... Oh, boy. So, Gabe, you know, I don't really be doing the tweets these days. Not so much there. I did pop in and check on my mentions over the weekend. Like, I'll do that, you know, pop in there, but I'm not, like, doing the timeline or, like, keeping up with stuff like that. But I do pop up every now and then. And so when I pop in to go see what y'all saying to me and about me, it also puts, like, the trending topics on the side, you know, because I'll be doing it on the computer because I took all the joints off the phone. And the trending topic one day was Mina Kimes. And I look up, and it wasn't really about Mina. It was about Jeff Garcia. And Jeff Garcia did your classic, people who don't pay attention to the game, don't need to be talking about the game, dot, dot, dot. But, like, he's talking about a woman. You know what I mean? Like, he ain't saying it about me. There's zillions of men that have been dogging Jimmy Garoppolo. Because that's what he got mad at, was Mina dogging Jimmy Garoppolo. Plenty of men dog Jimmy Garoppolo. He decided to bring it to Mina. I don't really want to belabor the point on that one because the point is so obvious. You know what it is, right? Anyway, I do wonder what Jeff Garcia was thinking after Jimmy Garoppolo went full on Jimmy at the end of that game. And the thing about Jimmy going full on Jimmy at the end of that game is this, all right? What was it, 2 years ago when Josh Allen had that crazy YOLO game against the Houston Texans, right? Where he heaved the ball down the field to the square body and had the crazy, it was just all kinds of stuff. But the things he was doing were shocking. It was stunning to see somebody do that in a playoff game with the stakes being what they were. The most damning thing about Jimmy Garoppolo in the NFC Championship game was it wasn't stunning. It was wildly predictable. It was exactly what you would have thought was going to happen. So when they got back out there against the Rams on the field with under 2 minutes left and Jimmy Garoppolo was walking into the huddle, if I was a 49ers fan, I don't feel like I would have had any optimism. And I'm out here talking about this all hypothetically because I'm not a 49ers fan. But you know who is a 49ers fan? Gabe. So Gabe, I'm just curious. When Jimmy Garoppolo trotted out there with the chance to win the game, did you think you were going to win the game?
No.
You a Simpsons fan?
Yes.
You ever see the episode where Sideshow Bob robbed a Quickie Mart, pretended to be Krusty, and Homer, when he came in, jumped into a snack display to hide? Apu looks at Homer after the robbery is finished and says, I am paraphrasing, but it's very close to, it's okay, Mr. Simpson, the chance for you to emerge as a hero has passed. And that's basically what wound up happening there for Jimmy Garoppolo. He looked over there. Somebody walked up in the store with the heat. And he just threw something at him and ran away. That was it. Pass rush came. He did a little dip to try to run away. And Gabe, was it a backhand shovel that he tried to throw? Like it was a 6-4-3 double play? Is that what he did?
That's what it looked like to me. Doesn't he even have the arm sweatbands like a second baseman in the 90s would?
And the other part of it is this. He tried to do some shit like that before, too. Right? Like, what did I tell y'all coming into this game about Jimmy Garoppolo? It's not that he makes mistakes or makes incompletions. It's that they're never run-of-the-mill. It's always the potential for a catastrophe. Always the potential for a catastrophe. Now, this is my thing I say about quarterbacks and trying to win a Super Bowl. This has just always been the way that I've read it and why it's important. Scheme is only going to get you so far, right? You're going to wind up, if you're trying to go through a playoff round and win three or four games, you're going to wind up in a situation where your quarterback has to do something beyond simply what is asked of him. You're going to have to do more than that. Jimmy might not even give you that. Like, at his best case scenario is throw it to that dude that's wide open right there. That's all they really asking him to do. And he just gave up the booty right there, just in front of everybody, just didn't care, right? Just had his booty out there for everybody to see. He just didn't know what to do. It's like he was on stage and he was panicking and he couldn't remember the words to the song and he just put his booty out there. That was it. That was Jimmy Garoppolo. That's what he had to give. And now the 49ers, who, when you really stop and think about it, had a pretty impressive season, considering all the players they lost, considering all the injuries that they had. And the thing is, on that list of injured players, you can make the argument is Jimmy Garoppolo. But the mistakes that he made had nothing to do with being hurt, right? So in this game, I don't know if you heard Troy Aikman kind of tell Matt Stafford's business, but he was like, I don't know if Matt Stafford is injured or not, but he didn't get enough on that throw because Matt Stafford tried to give the game away at the end too. You remember that interception he threw, the homie Tart is just got to be, he got to be up all night. You know what I'm saying? He had the chance. Remember that game when that dude from your team was right there and Matthew Stafford threw the ball right to him and he could have kind of sealed the Super Bowl? I don't know if you saw that part.
Oh, I saw it.
Okay. Just checking. But he was just like, yeah, I don't know if he's injured or not, but you know, this throw, when he mentioned another throw, he just didn't have enough. And I was like, oh, so Matthew Stafford is injured.
To rewind a second, I noticed you called it an interception. Was that because it was such a sure thing that he should have caught in it?
Oh, my bad. I forgot it wasn't an interception. He tried to. It was close. It should have been an interception. Yes, you're absolutely correct.
Technicality there.
Yeah, I didn't mean to tease you there, Gabe. I was trying to point out the fact that it wasn't an interception and then I gave you a glimpse at, you know, what it could have been. My fault. But so Matthew Stafford is hurt is what you're telling me. Because I got to say, when you mentioned two different times that Matthew Stafford just underthrew, like, yeah, I don't think I've ever seen him underthrow anybody before. I've seen him throw behind people, but underthrow? Nah, not really his bag. All right? Jimmy, we know he had the thumb. We know he had the shoulder. That wasn't a problem. In fact, they'd have been better off if his shoulder was hurt even more so he couldn't have done that bullshit when he threw that thing out there. Like that's what they needed. That right there. But no, great season for you 49ers. I had to give Shanahan credit, all that stuff. They pulled that together. They were 3-5. They pulled that thing together, and they were a quarterback away from the Super Bowl. Winner guy, huh? Because remember, that was the thing, the argument that all you guys gave us about Jimmy Garoppolo was, well, he just wins games. He just wins games. And all I'm asking you, did that dude look like a winner to you? Right? Because you're not hyping up any other talent or skill that he has. The argument that ultimately gets made is he's a winner, pure and simple. Did that look like a winner? He looked like somebody you might see at Mrs. Winners in Atlanta, but he didn't look like a winner. That was not a winner. What he is an NFL quarterback. Like, he should be in the NFL. And I think that there are teams, I'm going to go do this right now, teams that would probably be better off if Jimmy Garoppolo was their starting quarterback. Believe it or not, they exist. You could argue that Miami might be better if he's their starting quarterback. At the very least, he'd be a good idea for the Jets to keep around as a backup. Daniel Jones, what's the difference? You know what I'm saying? The Detroit Lions, is Jared Goff better than him? I don't have a clear answer for you on that one. So I'm not going to go through the entire league, but I'm just saying, and I think you see the point. It's not that he has no business playing NFL football. Not every team's supposed to win the Super Bowl. I just can't see how anybody ever thought that you was going to be able to win a Super Bowl with that dude. Like, I never said that you could not win a Super Bowl with Matthew Stafford, for example. But I didn't think, and I still don't think, that he's such a significant difference maker. And you could say, hey, well, the Rams are going to the Super Bowl this year. They did it with Jared Goff one time. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't, I think he's a good player, but I don't think he's necessarily a difference maker. Josh Allen, difference maker. Him, not. I don't think he's a difference maker. But Jimmy Garoppolo, yeah. Your time is up here, buddy. This is exactly why you trade 3 first-round picks to get Trey Lance. But if I am a 49ers fan, we trade 3 first-round picks for a dude that couldn't beat this cat out. Like, I still go back to that. I would be a little nervous. This would not leave me feeling encouraged at all. I would probably be a little bit shook. Don't worry, Gab. I'll start talking about the Rams now. I realize everything I'm saying about the 49ers had to be very sad and depressing. Anybody riding higher right now than Odell Beckham? Like, you talk about the come up. Odell Beckham got out of there. Odell Beckham, do you know how mad they going to be in Cleveland if Odell wins the Super Bowl? It's going to be about like it was after LeBron won a title in Miami. I think after LeBron won that second title, I even called up a radio show in Cleveland because they were so mad. They were so salty. I feel like that's what, if Odell gets one, like more and more, and Odell 2022 is not the player Randy Moss was in 2007, but it does look more and more with every passing day. Like his period in Cleveland, we will think of that the way we think of Randy Moss's time in Oakland. Talked about this on here before. If you go look at the way that people talked about Moss on the way, he lost a step. He just wasn't that good anymore. All those same things. Except Odell Beckham had the good fortune to come in and he gets to be the number 2 receiver because the new phenomenon, Cooper Kupp, out there dominating it. Dominating it. And now the Rams get to play. I was going to say they get to play in their home stadium, but that feel like a technicality game. Didn't that feel like a neutral site game to you?
I mean, there are a lot of Niners fans down in Southern California.
But they should never be as deep in the stadium as they were. Like, it felt like it was just loud for who. It made it for a great, like, television watching environment, but it felt like a bowl game rather than being a home game for the Rams. Like I say, which as an observer is cool. It's just wild to me that we have no less than 3 teams right now in the NFL that can either play a neutral site or road game at their own stadium. Both of those teams in LA and the Raiders.
Worst case scenario for the Rams is either hosting the Niners or the Raiders.
Yes. Yes. But they could host the Chargers, then it'd be 100% Rams fans. They'd be straight under those circumstances. But hey, man, Sean McVay. I think I told you this. This is why I kind of rock with Sean McVay. Because when we were putting all the credit in the world on Sean McVay, great as this, great as that, all that stuff, right? I never felt like he bought into it. Like, I felt like he felt that, it, at least in the way it was publicly presented, it's like it was just a little bit absurd. And they went to that Super Bowl and got knocked down a little bit, figured some things out, shuffled some stuff around. And here they are, and they go into the Super Bowl. And this time, we talk about probably what we should be talking about, the players on the team, not spending so much time talking about the coach. And I appreciate the fact that he gave it be like that in the first place. Because if he wanted this to all be about him, it would be. Now this dude is like 2nd Super Bowl and he like Gabe's age. Shout out to you. Shout out to you. All right, man. I don't really typically be going too hard and too bold on the predictions. It's just not really my bag, man. Because it don't really matter. And when I get it right, it don't really matter. Y'all don't care when I really get it right. Y'all only care when I get it wrong. And when I say y'all, I mean you, Joel D. Anderson. That's who I mean when I say you. And so I was 100% right about Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't know why, but I didn't hear nothing from Joel about that. I can't really explain to you why, but I didn't hear nothing from Joel about my absolute clairvoyance and correctness when it came to Jimmy Garoppolo. But at the end of that Bengals-Chiefs game, I don't even think the game was all the way over yet. I sure did hear from Joel then. I sure did. Yep, he definitely did say something. In fact, let me see if I can find what he had to say. Because he's that kind of guy. He's what guy? What guy? That guy. Joel sent this and said, Bo, you in trouble, right? He trying to make me feel like he would feel, you know what I'm saying? Because he thinks like he would feel real bad under those circumstances. And you know my response when people try to turn stuff around about me, like, how does it feel when you get this wrong? And my answer is typically pretty simple. Like, I make a lot of money. It's the trade. However, I'm not going to pretend. I don't think I had ever been surer of anything in my life than I was that the Cincinnati Bengals were not going to the Super Bowl. And I don't feel bad about that. What not going to happen, though, because this is what I'm seeing when I made my little check-in, because I wanted to see what y'all was saying about that, right, on the tweets. His was not about to happen. Y'all ain't about to act like you thought they was going to win. And I'm seeing a lot of that. Like, Michael Smith didn't even really want to say they was going to win. He knew how ridiculous that sounded fundamentally as a premise, right? Be like, oh, man, you owe the Bengals an apology. If anybody got to apologize, everybody got to apologize. I looked up, I had Bengals fans in my mentions, and I swear that's never happened before for any reason whatsoever. Where y'all been? Even when y'all was kind of good at the beginning of the last decade, nowhere to be found. Because you knew not to count on that. You knew not to bet on that. You knew not to depend on that. We all knew this about the Cincinnati Bengals. And then Kansas City went up 21-3, and they had a chance to go up 28-3, and they didn't go up 28-3. They didn't go up 24-3. And I ain't going to lie, I'd be looking a lot righter if they had just kicked a field goal right there. Getting greedy. It's 3 points right there in front of you. You playing the Bengals. You don't need to be greedy, but apparently they needed to be greedy because the second half came around and I don't know what happened. I don't really understand like how time travel works. I don't know like whether they making DeLoreans again, but like the actual Doc Brown edition, or if they got some kind of like bullet train that can get you halfway across the country in 15 or 20 minutes. But I don't really understand how it is that Jimmy Garoppolo had time to not only go to Kansas City, but get full makeup and wig, put on Patrick Mahomes' jersey, and play the second half. I just never predicted that that could happen. Like, I'll be honest, I got this game wrong. But I just don't feel like that was a foreseeable circumstance. And that is exactly what happened. Even if it didn't happen exactly like that, that is exactly what it looked like, right? Like, I had to make a run at some point. I was borrowing my sister-in-law's car, and so I was listening on the radio, and they was talking about just how patient Patrick Mahomes has been since the game changed, you know, and all that stuff. And they started playing different with the high safeties and all of that stuff, how he had just been so patient. He had been so patient, And then the second half came and he was like, man, what I want to be patient for? I'm trying to break records. He came completely apart in a way that I don't recall having seen him come apart. I don't recall having seen him play anything like that in the postseason. Like, this is all on him. There ain't nowhere else to look. Jordan gave the game away. And now on the other side, we have, again, the Cincinnati Bengals going to the Super Bowl. Now, before I sat down here to record this year podcast, I was watching a little First Take, and Stephen A. had mentioned the whole they couldn't win a playoff game in all those years of Marvin Lewis, and now they get this done. And I hope Stephen A. doesn't think that this has a damn thing to do with Marvin Lewis or Zach Taylor. Like, this has to do with Joey. This is a Joe Burrow situation. And not because Joe Burrow played so well in that game. Like, he held it in the road and did all right in the second half. Like, I don't want to pretend like, you know, he was terrible or anything like that. But the value of Joe Burrow to me, this is the dude that stood up at the press conference like a week ago and said, get used to it because this is the standard now and this is what we're going to do for a long time. Do you know you play for the Bengals? Like, that's my thought. And he just says it as level as he possibly can and meant every word of it. So the Cincinnati defense, I thought, played well in the second half. But it wasn't like, oh, man, they're just flying all over the place making these things happen. They held it in the road. Right. And I can't tell you that I would believe that in the presence but so many other quarterbacks, given that the score was 21-3 and given that franchise being what that franchise is, what it's been, and basically a roster of guys that have never played for anything or won anything, I'm not positive that they just hold it in the road and maintain their poise and hold their water in that way if the dude out front ain't Joe Burrow. I'm not sure of that. And now this dude is taking the Bengals to the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl. And Gabe, I don't know if you saw his postgame quote. First of all, he did the Icky Shuffle. He started doing the Icky Shuffle with Icky Woods, which is pretty impressive because the Icky Shuffle was a long time ago. That was the Icky Shuffle was before Gabe was born. And by the way, as far as dances go, the Icky Shuffle wasn't particularly impressive. And I know that because I can do it.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're a white quarterback in general, sometimes you got to stick with the two-step, stick with the simple joint.
Yeah. While that's fair, though, I ain't putting nothing past Joe Burrow. Man, Joe Burrow swagged out. Did you see his quote after the game? Somebody asked him if the diamonds in his piece or his chain were real. He said, yeah, I made too much money for them not to be real. That's what I'm saying. Like, they got him. They got Ja'Marr Chase. Okay. Two things, Marvin Lewis, whatever it's worth, even with AJ Green, he still ain't Andy Dalton. Like, I can't believe this, because think about this. In all this run and everything you've seen, you ain't seen nobody even try to pretend like this got something to do with Zach Taylor. You just haven't. I have not seen anybody try to make that argument. This is so much about the dudes that they have on the team. Eli Apple is going to the Super Bowl. I can't imagine how mad Giants fans are. I don't know if you saw that. I think it was early this year. Eli Apple was bombing on people who were, you know, I think it was during these playoffs because he made that big play in the Titans game. And he talked about all the fans that he hated. He's stunting on them now, boy. He's stunting on them all the way. And that's how you know this wasn't really going well. Patrick Mahomes tried to throw the ball to Eli Apple. He tried. Now, another thing that happened, watching the ESPN before I got out here, GetUp had a whole thing about how does this game alter the trajectory of Patrick Mahomes' career and legacy? Yo, he's allowed to have a bad game. Even if the bad game happens here, the dude had a bad one. It happens. Joe Montana's got some ugly losses on that resume, if you go back and look at it, for example. Tom Brady doesn't really have ugly losses. Peyton Manning has some ugly losses. You go back and look at it. I think the 41-0 loss to the Jets in 2002 is the one that jumps off the page. Dude's got some ugly losses. This just happened. It doesn't change the fact, who's the best quarterback in the league? Patrick Mahomes. Who's the odds-on favorite to win the AFC next year, bars of significant personnel changes? The Kansas City Chiefs. He threw 3 touchdowns in the first half. He threw 2 interceptions in the second half. Kind of what the story comes out to. And then, well, there's not the one in the second half. And then the other one was in overtime. And that was just a terrible, indefensible, like an immature throw. But I couldn't figure out why it is that he thought that he needed to push the ball down the field into double coverage. And what the Chiefs don't have as far as receivers go is throw it up and go get it guy. Like, they ain't got a DeAndre Hopkins. That's not what, like, Tyreek Hill gives you. I mean, It, for me, was stunning to realize that Mahomes was just out here trying to get a game away. Can't see it. Don't know. But sometimes what you just got to do over there on the other side is hold it down. And that is what happened. Because, look, Cincinnati offense didn't play particularly well. Ja'Marr Chase did not play especially well. Like, he had a touchdown catch, but he wasn't like he was out there gashing him or anything like that. Like, the Bengals held their water. And I think that is maybe the most shocking development I would have expected. Because my thing is, the Chiefs are that's what I said the last week. Chiefs are the team that's been here a zillion times. They're the team that you bet on. You definitely, like, it's the Bengals, man. Do you realize that before this year, the last time they won a playoff game, it was against the Houston Oilers. Oilers. Warren Moon played for them then. If you haven't heard, it's brought to you by the new Love Your Car Guarantee from CarMax. CarMax, here to innovate.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, this first story comes from Science.
My name is Joshua Yaffa. I'm a correspondent for The New Yorker. For my article, The Great Thaw, I traveled to the outer reaches of northeastern Siberia to write about what's happening with the world's permafrost and why it matters. Permafrost, as the word suggests, is the name for permanently frozen soil that lies under 9 million square miles of the Earth's surface, around one quarter of the landmass of the Northern Hemisphere. In recent decades, as temperatures have begun to rise, by as many as 2 or 3 degrees Celsius in the northern Arctic regions where permafrost is most prevalent, all of that frozen soil has begun to thaw. The reason that's a problem is that over many millennia, the permafrost swallowed up all manner of organic material, from tree stumps to woolly mammoths, keeping it locked in a kind of long-term cryogenic slumber. But now, as the permafrost has begun to thaw, microbes in the soil awaken and begin to feast on all that defrosting biomass. In The New Yorker, I compared it to a funky organic process, akin to unplugging your freezer and leaving the door open, only to return a day later to see that the chicken breasts in the back have begun to rot. Only in the case of permafrost, all this microbial digestion releases a constant belch of carbon dioxide and methane. In other words, the thawing of the permafrost creates a kind of climate feedback loop. The release of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere leads to warmer temperatures, which in turn thaw the permafrost further, only leading to higher temperatures and more permafrost thaw. That means, unlike human-caused climate change, say, emissions from factories or automobiles, once permafrost thaw and greenhouse gas emissions that come from it really picks up speed, there's not really much we can do to stop it. As one scientist who studies the issue told me, the problem is you can't just turn it off, let alone reverse it.
Ruh-roh! That's all I got. That's just ruh-roh. And you know how you know it's ruh-roh? Because in theory, a scientist should be low-key also kind of excited about this, right? Like, there's all kinds of stuff in the permafrost. We can learn all kinds of things about, hey, nope. We got bigger things to deal with before we could get to that. And nobody cares. Like, the analogy about the freezer is pretty interesting, except, like, it's the zillions old. Like, can you imagine how funky everything was back then? Like, I don't know. I just imagine it was a much smellier time in every way. Think about it, man. It was boo-boo everywhere back then. It's just like, I mean, maybe they had a place where everybody went, like, take it around the corner or whatever. You know what I'm saying? But it was boo-boo from all, like, but I guess the animals boo-boo all the time everywhere, and they somehow figure out how to make it work. Maybe boo-boo get a bad rap. I don't know. But I just imagine ancient times just boo-boo all over the place.
All right, Bo, this second story comes from business.
Hey, it's Lauren Rosenblatt. I'm a business reporter from the Seattle Times. So last week, Washington's Attorney General Bob Ferguson joined a group of elected officials in suing Google over allegations that the company was collecting users' location data without their consent. The lawsuit says Google has been using consumers' location data without their knowledge, and in some cases, directly against their intent. It accused Google of continuing to track users' location even after they opted out. The lawsuit also accused Google of repeatedly nudging consumers to turn location tracking on by telling them some apps and services wouldn't work as well without it. Some tech experts argue that's not really the case and say the claim is misleading. Google says the allegations are outdated and that it has been working to make changes related to users' data. It launched an incognito version of Maps that gives directions without keeping a record of where the device is, and it created a new feature for new accounts that automatically deletes data that is more than 18 months old. But this isn't the first time Google has been accused of something like this. A 2018 report found Google was storing users' location data even after they enabled a privacy setting meant to prevent them from doing so. Officials from Washington, D.C. began investigating the company in 2018, and Arizona's attorney general sued Google in 2020. The most recent lawsuit comes from officials in Washington State, D.C., Texas, and Indiana. It's not yet clear how many people were affected by these practices, but the Washington Attorney General's office estimates there could be hundreds of thousands of potential violations. He's asking the court to order Google to change its practices, give up data it acquired, and return any profit it made from using these practices.
I ain't gonna lie, man. I feel like the moral of the story on all of these, Google and everybody else, like location services, tracking, all that stuff, you're not opting out. You're requesting to opt out. Maybe your request is accepted. Maybe it's not. They're not going to tell you either way, right? They're not going to get you a wait for confirmation on this. Nah, they've just, I mean, the whole model has been built on this, and they built it on this before people got hip to game. And then when people got hip to game, they're like, yeah, we'd like you to stop. They're like, yeah, but that's what keeps the share price up. And unless they can figure out a way out of this that ain't going to drop the share price, they ain't going to make the change. Because all them shareholders would like, if you track me, then fine. Guess that's what we got to do, just keep that share price up.
In your opinion, is the Google tracking worse / more damning / more an invasion of privacy, or is kind of like what Facebook does and has done?
See, and I'm more familiar with it with Facebook, though I imagine Google does some of the same. And I guess Google does because they run YouTube. But my thing with Facebook is less about the invasion of privacy than the fact that they're trying to invade my brain and tell me what I want to see, right? And like keep me looped into these things that just run over and over and over again. Like that's the biggest thing that gets me. Google has to own it as it relates to YouTube. And Facebook in a similar sort of situation where they just keep piping you poison because they think that you want it based on all these other things that you have done. Like, I mean, because in the end, it's an invasion of privacy, a lot of this stuff. But for most people, I don't know what they're going to do to you with it, right? It feels icky. It's certainly a problem in a legitimate slippery slope situation. But there's not that much that's going to like actually happen as a result of it. But them feeding you content based off that stuff. Oh, yeah. Now that's a thing.
All right. This last one comes from education.
Hi, I'm Alyssa Nadworny. I am a correspondent at NPR. And the SAT, the college admissions exam, that I don't know if you remember, but you probably took it with a paper and a pencil, it is now going all digital. So starting in 2024, U.S. students will take the SAT entirely online. The test is going to change a little bit. It's going to shrink from 3 hours to two. It'll include shorter reading passages, and you'll get to use a calculator on the entire math section. You'll still take the test at a high school or at a test center. That's not changing. But essentially, you know, this is coming at a time when the SAT and the ACT, you know, their relevance in college admissions is being questioned. So more than 1,800 U.S. colleges won't require a test score in admissions for this coming fall of 22. And a ton of those schools are actually keeping that policy for 2023. So big changes coming to the SAT. I think a lot of students are excited because they just learn better online, like especially those who lived through the pandemic. But it is kind of a grasp to stay relevant in a time when we're really rethinking these tests and kind of the weight they have. I just think it's important to note that highly selective colleges represent such a small fraction of colleges in America. The majority of colleges have open access policies. These are community colleges, many regional public colleges. You aren't competing to get in. And so I think that's just really important to remember that there's a lot of opportunity in the US, and it's not these kind of like really highly selective, hard to get in colleges. That said, the SAT and the ACT are pretty pervasive in our society. A lot of states require you to take the exam to graduate, to get your high school diploma. They can also help you win scholarships. And so the University of California system, one of the largest in the nation, actually just voted last fall that they're going to permanently remove the tests from the application process. And this is huge because a lot of colleges look to the UC system to kind of lead the way on things like this. And California produces so many high school grads that colleges on the East Coast and in the South, they want those students to come to their school, to come to their college. So if California students are deciding not to take the exam because the UC system doesn't require it, what does that mean for other schools?
So the test itself going digital, and maybe I'm just a fogey here, I would definitely rather take that with paper. Like I would like to be able to easily go back and forth, right? Not answer a question and then come back to it or like write in the margins and stuff like that. And I guess you can do that. I mean, I don't know, like that's, I would not want to take a 2-hour test on a computer. I guess maybe this is a different generation and this is kind of a thing that they do, but that's what got me is I would not, that is not something that I would feel like I wanted. And so it's interesting, like the idea that they're doing this to stay relevant or something that's just interesting. Yeah, I just look at it like that's not the way that I would want to play the game. But do not forget, big part of why the SAT was widely used at schools. I believe the forerunner on this is the University of Texas. Keep black people out, right? Came up with a test, showed a clear difference between how black people and white people score on it. And we're like, oh, sounds good to us. Just kept it rolling. But like the SAT and all that is a tool that is used simply as a barrier to entry more than it is as a measurement of aptitude. Now, I think there's a value in standardized testing, right? Like I think there's some things you're trying to figure out, some answers that you want to get, that I don't know exactly how you come up with doing it, but I think there's something to be said for having a test that everybody takes because there's so much variance in people's experiences and what they learn and what they're taught and everything else. I'm not a person who just dismisses standardized tests out of hand. I'm not. But I do understand the ways that they are used. And I kind of wonder here in a like digital divide sort of world, like the kids that don't live on the internet in the ways that she's talking about, like these kids in pandemic who learn better online, is this helpful to them? because my guess is this might exacerbate the gaps in how people test.
Do you think if they do away with the SAT, do you think that like schools will have placement testing in lieu of that, kind of like when you arrive type of thing, or like just before you arrive?
That's interesting, because the one thing about it is the SAT determines whether or not you get in, and then it never comes up again. Like, it wasn't like, hey, so you got an 1150. These are the classes you're allowed to take. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't work that way. So I will be, what comes next is always the question, because people thought this was serving a purpose in the first place. So they're going to try to come up with something else to serve that purpose if they don't believe the purpose is being served.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. Game cheating time. Voicemails today. Got some really good ones. This is one of my favorites, if not my favorite.
It never gets old. People are so passionate. They go right back to the moment. Picture it.
Oh my gosh. And we got some heaters. Everybody didn't leave their name or their location, which is fine. I respect it. This first one is a real good one. Here it is.
Yo, what up, Bo? Long time listener, long time fan. So it's NCAA football, the last jump that came out with 14. You know, they had the connected dynasty where you and all your friends would play together online. So I had LSU, my boy had Florida State. So for context, I left UCLA the year before and got LSU first year, won the national championship. We weren't that talented, but thanks to good coaching and schematics, we were able to upset them in the championship game. So we run it back. Next year, we're in the Orange Bowl. I had developed the reputation of being the two-minute guru. So it's late in the game. I'm up. He's driving. I let him score. I'm confident in what I can do with my team. There's plenty of time left, and I know if I try to have a goal line stand, if he scores, I'm only going to have a couple seconds left. Let him score. It's about a minute late. I'm ready. I'm ready. I got my plays in my head. I think I got two timeouts left. Bo, this dude squib kicks it, and he kicks it so perfectly. It's like near the sideline but doesn't go out of bounds. The ball just stops. I have a bunch of players in the area, and nobody runs to the ball. My homie picks it up around my 35-yard line and wins the game off a squib kick because nobody on my team reacted. Bo, me and him ain't speak for a week. Appreciate you.
Why was you mad at him? What did he do? Were you not able to click on demand to go get the ball? Oh, I'd be so heated. Especially since I hear a lot of fault on his own end on top of it. I feel like he has solutions to the problem.
It sounds like that type of gameplay now where you can switch amongst your players rather than being selected and locked onto one player. It's like, was he just confused about what player he was actually using, or did it actually lock up on him?
He lost it on a squib kick. Oh, man. I ain't know video games that got advanced enough to let you squib kick, by the way. Hadn't thought about that.
This next one comes from James in Florida. Here it is.
What's going on, Bo? I want to share a hard lesson I learned recently in clock management with NBA Jam. And so it was, I think about last month, I was playing with the Warriors. I was sweating breeze and stuff with Chris Mullin, Tim Hardaway. I was getting it against the Mavericks. And it was a close game down to the stretch. Next thing you know, I make a bucket, go ahead up about, I think it was about just under 2 seconds left. And so it's not enough time for the Mavericks to be able to advance the ball, but I'm only up two and they need a three. And so I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, I should be pretty straight, should be pretty straight. And like, I don't even remember who shot this three from full court. All I remember is just seeing red. But I do know that when they shot this finger roll three pointer from full court, the first thing I said with a few folks around about me was, they better not make this. And it was just such a slow 2 seconds that passed. And they made it, wetted. I lost by one, wasn't even sure what to think. And I haven't played NBA Jam since, and I don't know the next time I'm trying to play it. But that's my story about the game cheating, and cheating it did. Thank you, Bo. Hope everything's well. Bye.
Hey, man. Shout out to the homie Florida James. I was actually thinking as he said this, we don't get a lot of NBA Jam calls on this because no game has cheated more than NBA Jam. And it's because NBA Jam isn't pretending like it's not cheating. It had the strongest computer assistance of any game there was. It was going to be close at the end, no matter what. That being said, James, you said the Mavericks, who, as I recall, would have had a roster with Jim Jackson and Mike Iuzzalone. And I feel like some of this is your fault. Like that's they were the bummiest of the bums on NBA Jam back then. But on NBA Jam, make all kinds of ridiculous things. Everybody went away. Did everybody leave NBA Jam feeling like a winner? Did everybody leave feeling like a loser? No worse idea than betting money on a game on NBA Jam. You just betting on a coin flip. Now think about this. You don't know who's good at NBA Jam and who's not. Not from the arcade, all computer assistants.
All right, this last one is a good one to close this out. Here it is.
What's going on, Bo? Gabe, wanted to check in about the game cheating. This is back in like 03, college NCAA football. Joey Harrington, I think, was on the cover. And I had my dynasty going, and I had like a little bit of, play a little bit of small time D3 college football. So I had a lot of time on my hands. You know, that's what we did. So I played like dynasty, like two seasons every couple of weeks. I was playing it out. So, you know, get like a few years into my dynasty, I'm like, I'm gonna wrap it up. I got Florida State running option offense. And like, I knew it was a glitch in the game because there was this kid that I recruited, a running back, last name Dowden. And so, you know, I tricked it up. Like, I got the Florida State dynasty. This is my final year running it. I'm like, yeah, man, this is going to be my star recruit. I make the pitch to him. Like, yeah, man, you get to come and fulfill the Bowden legacy on the field at Florida State. He played running back. I was already loaded at running back, and I make it all the way to the championship game in the season. And I had it set up on the tournament. So I made it through the playoffs, got to the championship game, and my star running back get hurt. So I was like, nothing better. Time for Bowden to shine. Put Bowden in the game. Run the option. This dude, the pitch man, but he go block every time I go to pitch it to him. So, yep, guess who lost the championship? Bowden on the field. And I got some respect, so I didn't even run a new dynasty. I just started it all over. And I was like, man, terrible way for the Bowden legacy to end my run at Florida State as the director of their program / player coach. So, yep, that's it. Know the game was cheating when the pitch man go to block on the option.
I love how everybody, including myself, when they talk about NCAA, really talks about themselves like they are the coach, right? Like, we get right into it. We had great schematics. We did this. Like, I used to sit up with the controller in my hand and make the recruiting pitch out loud. And the final line would always be, there is a place for you at the University of Texas. And I would load that roster up and get them athletes and start changing positions. And all, like, I don't know what it was, man. I really felt like I was out here doing something. Like, I truly, truly did feel like I was out here doing something. I always did. My man said he was blocking every time he went to pitch him the ball.
You can safely, like, rest assured, if you want to get a voicemail in for the game cheating, just do an NCAA dynasty story. I will pick it.
Everybody's like, we all just get there, and I know them cats ain't doing that on purpose. It just come out natural. It's just how you feel about your time there and the experience. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassain handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thanks to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Joshua Yaffa of The New Yorker. Check out his story on the permafrost defrosting in Siberia. Thanks to Lauren Rosenblatt of The Seattle Times. Check out her story on tech giants getting profits by knowing where you are because they're tracking you. And thanks to Elisa Nadworny of NPR. Check out her story on the SAT's attempts to stay relevant and going online. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.